Hello and welcome to the Radio Academy podcast with me, Roisin Hasty. If you're new here, then welcome along. Each week we go behind the scenes on different radio projects and podcasts that we've been listening to by speaking to the people who made them happen. Now this episode, we're joined by Steve Holden, who spent last month discussing everything Eurovision for the contest's official podcast.
This is the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast from Turin.
Hey, it's Steve, and hello from the turquoise carpet and the opening ceremony of this year's Eurovision Song Contest.
It was his first move into the world of podcasting, so it was great being able to pick his brains about how it all worked and what he learned along the way. He was full of great advice and brilliant backstage stories from Eurovision, so let's get to it. Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Roisin.
Hot off Eurovision.
Yeah, exhausted, but back to earth. It was amazing.
Good pun. Best mates with Sam Ryder now?
I was best mates with him already, to be honest, Roisin. But no, he did so well, coming second, the UK's best result since 1998. Oof. And I think there was so much hype around it. And I can genuinely say, every other delegation, so every other country at Eurovision, was obsessed with him. They loved him. They wanted to have selfies with him. There was a real buzz around the UK this year, which for a long-suffering Eurovision fan like myself, although staying impartial because I did the Eurovision podcast, it was great to see. It was so nice to see the UK being talked up for once.
Yeah, totally. And you were at the centre of all that, making the official Eurovision podcast. You had pretty much a standing start on that, didn't you?
Yeah, it was all me. It was crazy. I guess if I was like a musician, I'd have been an independent artist. Do you know what I mean? Just doing it myself. I bought all the equipment. I got the music myself. It was all me, you know, there wasn't anybody else involved. And it was a real learning curve, but I loved it because I didn't just do podcast episodes while I was at Eurovision. I did it in the run up to Eurovision. So I started maybe a month before. So the first ones were very much, you know, at home, chatting to people over Zoom, over virtual connections. And then when I went to Eurovision, it became more of an in-person podcast. So it kind of changed over the course of the series.
And were you expecting that, or was that something that you learned as you went along?
No, I was expecting it because it was part of, you know, my plan and my schedule of episodes that it would start kind of longer form at the beginning, chatting to the contestants, talking about their personalities. And then when I got to Turin, my aim was to take people behind the scenes and give them access that they couldn't get just by watching the songs or listening to the songs. Sam Ryder, representing the United Kingdom, we've caught you after your second rehearsal, after you've pulled the second half of the draw. How are you feeling?
I feel fantastic. And I can see by both of our complexion that we are already struggling.
We are both
being in the natural sunlight for about 10 seconds. Jumper was a bad choice. Whew.
But it's the first sun you've seen in Turin.
Oh, no, it's so lovely. It changes everything, doesn't it? Just a little bit of, like, I don't know, solar power.
I loved it. I love Eurovision anyway. Anyone who knows me knows that I love Eurovision. And I know how much the contest means to fans. And this is the world's biggest live music event. You know, it's watched by so many millions of people. I think 160 million TV viewers watched it this year. And I've always known that there's an appetite for content around Eurovision. So they didn't have an official podcast before this year. There's lots of fan podcasts, which are all brilliant. But I just felt that there was a gap for an official podcast that could take people behind the scenes and use all the expertise that I've had before and bring it to life, I guess, which I hope I did.
Yeah, and definitely listening to the podcast, the access that you get to the contestants, to the spaces that they are in for the contest is amazing. And I guess being the official podcast opens those doors for you.
Yeah, completely. Because I base myself in this place called the delegation bubble. So it's where all the dressing rooms are for the contestants. And it's a place where the acts can hang out when they're not performing or they come in for rehearsals. So you get to know the acts, but you also get to know the delegations as well. So the dancers, the choreographers, you get to know the heads of delegation. So they're the people that are responsible for each country. So it's just amazing, even just watching what people are doing, who's speaking to who, who's chilling out. And it's not like I'm there intruding with my microphone. It's where you pick up the stories. It's where you hear about people and what people are doing. So a good example for this series was Spain, represented by this woman called Chanel, who was amazing, had this incredible dance routine called, the song was called Slow Mo. And if anyone's seen it, it's the choreography is so high class. Turns out that her choreographer is this LA super choreographer called Kyle, who watched the Eurovision film during the pandemic decided that he wanted to be part of the contest. When I heard this story just on the grapevine, just from being backstage, I found him and we organized an interview. And so I got him on an episode of the podcast, because isn't that a great story?
So he saw like the spoof version of Eurovision and thought, I want in on that.
Yes.
That's amazing. Just hearing you tell that story, it's obvious you've said you're a Eurovision fan anyway. Do you think that helps you to find and seek out the stories that you know as a listener, you would be like, I would love to know this?
Yeah, completely, because I'm a total geek. So one of my interview styles, and it always has been during my career, is I much prefer it as a chat, informal, because I think you get so much more out of people. So just finding out, not asking them all the cliched questions of what does your song mean? And, you know, do you like your song? And do you like another song? All that kind of stuff. It's more about getting these personalities out, because this is the biggest thing that so many of these acts are ever going to do in their career. It's such a moment. And you want to find out who that person is that's doing it. And there's so many amazing stories.
Yeah. And you've touched on there your experience of doing interviews, and your background is that you, for years, were a music journalist at Radio One. So you're more than used to interviewing artists, being in these, like, you know, busy live environments. How is it different starting a podcast and using the skills that you had to then be like, okay, I'm now a podcast host?
All the skills that I'd learnt through being a music reporter for Radio One helped me, because the interviewing part was the easy part. The editing part was the easy part, because I've done so much of that before. But I think it was just creating, creating the podcast was something I'd never done before. And I tried different styles. I did different bits here and there. You know, it's probably not the finished product, and I certainly didn't want to copy anybody else's podcast. I kind of just did what I thought people would want to hear. So who knows? It's one of these things, isn't it? You just kind of do it and see how it sounds, and hopefully it sounded all right.
In a way, was it almost like a gift, knowing that you already had this listenership that was crying out for like an official Eurovision behind the scenes podcast, and all you had to do was create it and put it out there?
I hope so. You know, through just Twitter, anytime I did a story about Eurovision in the BBC, it would get the most interaction, and it would get them, you know, more people would like tweets about me tweeting about Eurovision than any other subject. So I knew the fan base was there. And also, this is crucial for this podcast. This couldn't be a UK focused podcast. Eurovision is a global event. So it had to be something that would appeal to everybody. And at last count, I think it's reached about 177 territories. I mean, some of those territories, it's like one download, but
you'll
still
take it.
I'll take it. And actually, the proof has been in the pudding that, yes, okay, a sizable chunk of listenership is in the UK, but not as much as people might think. You know, it is spread across countries like Spain, America, the Netherlands, Italy, even. So we forget that we love Eurovision in the UK, but it is a global event and people want that. And also, that means that you have to be really careful in the presentation, that you can't throw too many British isms into it. You have to use plain language. You can't use slang. You can't use phrases that are not universal. And I've checked in as well with other countries and other listeners, and I've said, I asked for feedback. I said, can you understand me? Am I going too fast, too slow? And universally, most people now have said, yeah, we can. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah. So you're at your intro and you're meeting all these people, you're getting interviews left, right and centre. You also have a vague plan of things that you've already recorded, perhaps. How do you then sit down and go, okay, this is going to be in the final episode?
Yeah, I think that comes back to my BBC training and my work at Radio 1 in making things seem... what's the best way of describing it? They make it seem natural. Like most interviews, I start it in a certain way. So then I retrospectively script around it. So it seems like I've gone from one thing to another, because when I'm interviewing the acts, I don't have any chronological order. I don't have an order in mind. Like I haven't got a running order in my head.
There was a really nice bit actually that I was listening to where you, one of your other reporters had spoken to a contestant, and in the background, Sam Ryder was doing a sound check. So when you introduce the interview, you were like, what's really cool about this next interview is that Sam Ryder was in the background doing a sound check. If you listen carefully, you'll hear it. And then rather than that being a distraction, that became like more context of this, they're actually behind the scenes at Eurovision.
A year ago, I wouldn't even think that this year I'd be here and I would represent my country. But when The Voice started and people all over the internet, like in Azerbaijan, they were commenting everywhere, telling each other like Nadir should be representing Azerbaijan this year. Obviously, that was very inspiring.
Now, usually on this podcast, I would ask my guests to end our discussion by giving three pieces of advice from their experience working in this industry. But I feel like we have a unique opportunity with you, Steve, to say, what three things have you learned from making a podcast that you would want to give to anyone else who's going, I want to start a podcast, where do I begin?
I think number one is trust your instinct. And I've said this to lots of young reporters in the past, and I think it rings so true. If you have a niche, if you have a passion about something, go and chase it, because there is an audience for it. In this day and age, in this world, there is something for everybody. So if you have a passion that you think is really obscure, chase it, because there will be other people that want to hear and know about that subject. And Eurovision is a prime example. For years, at university, I hid from my university mates to watch Eurovision because I didn't want them thinking that I wasn't very cool. And I had to, like, it was a party outside and I had to dash in and watch it. And now I would have no qualms about that because I know there's an amazing community of people. So trust your instinct with your passion is my first.
Yeah, I mean, chances are if you're super geeky about something, yeah, then you'll be a great podcast.
Exactly. That's perfect.
On that topic.
I know. I love that. Mine was a really long-winded answer and you did it in a nutshell, you know, which is perfect. Yeah. Be a geek, basically, because some people will love it. I think, secondly, I've definitely learned to be my own boss and my own person, having worked in a massive BBC machine for so long. Going to do this podcast, I kind of went out on my own and I enjoyed it, but it was a steep learning curve because I didn't have anybody as a crutch to lean back on. So actually, even after years of working at the BBC, it was still daunting and challenging, and just being learning to be a solo operator.
I'm guessing like the comparison of the first episode you ever made compared to the final episode, the first one probably took you days and the most recent one probably was like the tightest turnaround ever.
Yeah, it was. That's exactly it. The first one I just wanted to make absolutely perfect. And I think that was, again, you know, in BBC mode almost, like I wanted every single fade to be absolutely perfect. And by the end of it, there wasn't time to do that. You know, I do have a really high standard of editing.
But you'd probably just got better as well. And you'd learn, yeah, you'd learn what works and shortcuts on things and whatever,
yeah,
else.
Totally. There was a point at Eurovision when I did four episodes in 4 days. And by the end of it, I was just like, oh, God. But the end result is that you've made an amazing product. And the third thing is, I realized that I can do this without massive fancy kit and a big production team around me. And I know there are amazing podcasts out there with big teams of people behind them. And I didn't know whether I could match up to that. But actually, you don't, because as long as you've got the chat and the content and the furniture, you can still make a good podcast without all the airs and graces around it.
Big thanks to Steve. Remember, you can suggest ideas or projects you're working on for the podcast. Email us at podcast@radioacademy.org. You can also get lots more content if you're a Radio Academy member. It's £3 a month to join. And next week, we'll be sitting down with the ARIA award-winning team behind the Hits Radio. Thanks for listening.